Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2550. I'm Carol Levine, and I will be hosting this show tonight. Vice President of NASCA. We have a nice, healthy amount of people that have called in, and I do like to see that. And my co-host tonight is Penelope from Washington, and she's also an ambassador. And she's going to be helping me manage all the people, shall we say, that have called in. This is very good. So, anyway, I just want to read the mission statement. We do that. It's a good thing to do. And I want you to listen to what I'm saying here, because this is only a little bit of what we do at NASCA. But this in itself shows you, you know, some of what we do. We do have a single purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to child abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent and physical abuse, emotional trauma, and neglect. And we do so two different ways, and that's educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem. We know this, all right? This just the United States. It's all over the world, for God's sake. It started a long time ago. But anyway, and number two is offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse, and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Now look, if we had more people that were worried about our kids, I'm going to put it out there blunt, and if they were more educated as to how to, spot child abuse and so forth, I do believe that the stats would, you know, probably go down. Right now, during the COVID epidemic that we are a part of, unfortunately, a lot of schools are closed. We're having all this craziness. Kids being taught by parents who are not teachers, probably doing the very best that they can, and all this other stuff. And unfortunately, though, in some homes, probably many homes, the abusers are right there. So the kids have nowhere to run, do they? Okay. So this is very important that we keep in mind, you know, to keep our eyes and our ears open to watch, you know, to see, or if you hear something, for God's sake, make a phone call. You can call 1-800-4-A-CHILD. That's 1-800-4-A-CHILD, and that's the number 4-A-CHILD. And the counselors there, they have counselors. I know I've called them at 2 a.m. They have counselors there. And they will guide you as to who to call, what to call, and all this other stuff. If you don't want to deal with them yourself, it's always, you know, you don't have to give your name. It's anonymous. But our children need our help more than ever now, okay, because the stats are going up with the kids going into the hospitals, and they're in very bad shape, okay? So now that I've gotten that off my chest and out of my way, what I'd like to do is bring on our guest tonight, and her name is Melicia Mia McKinney, all right? And she's from Daytona Beach, Florida. She's a wife, she's an author, and she's a survivor of a 12-step workbook for survivors of sexual abuse. I like books like this. It gives you tools, something to work with. And she's also an advocate for adult survivors. Now, I'm not going to go reading her whole bio here. I'm going to let her speak how she wants to tell her story and also, too, why this is all very important to the children of today, tomorrow, and yesteryear, unfortunately. Okay, so let me bring on my guest and have her say hello. She can start her story. Okay, there you go. My mouse doesn't like to work. Go ahead. Mia, are you there?
Yes, I'm. Hey, how are you?
I'm doing fine. I don't know why, but I am. I'm doing fine. I was reading over your bio, and I always like it when people, you know, actually are authors of workbooks because, you know, there's so many of us out there, and I like the idea of this. You know, like 2 o'clock in the morning or 3 o'clock in the morning when normal people are sleeping or whatever, maybe they'll have, you know, a nightmare or they'll wake up and something triggers them. I mean, all kinds of things can happen when you suffer from PTSD especially. And it's pretty hard not to have, you know, something to work with. So workbooks are very, very important. That's my opinion, okay? So I'm a fan already. So why don't you start out by telling your story and so that, you know, people remember. There's a lot of, we have a lot of people online here. This is good tonight. And we have a lot of people that do listen, people out there who are listening. Okay, you might be bashful about coming on, whatever. If you can talk on the phone, you can talk on the show. That's all I'm going to say because we're laid back. I'm a little on the silly side. And Bob from Australia, he's definitely silly. He's up there. He's an ambassador. We have Penelope, and we have you, and we have Pamela from Louisiana, and we have Deborah from Arizona. Okay, and she, too, is a host. So we have a nice, healthy panel. But I'm going to give out the number anyway. It's 646-595-2118, okay? That's 646-595-2118. And if you want to call in, I have maybe one or two more spots left where, you know, a couple can call in and be a part of the show. And when we have so many people calling in, it's like having a party. Isn't that right? Okay.
There you go.
Yeah. So anyway, go ahead. Start telling us your story, and then I will go to the panel. You know how. I believe you've been on before, have you not, or yes or no?
Yes.
I thought so. I remember your name.
It's my third time, yeah.
Oh, okay. I remembered that name. You probably received some of the notes from me. Okay, so what we do, though, I'll tell the listening audience, we do have a panel on. And what they do, okay, is I will stop you, okay, Mia, in the middle of a sentence, maybe a little bit at the end of the sentence, and say, we have to go to the panel, because I want them to feel engaged, okay, in the show. And it makes the show healthier, happier, livelier, whatever. And it gives out even more information to those who do listen, because they can identify. Our stories are never the same, but they're very similar, okay, in many ways. So go ahead, start your story.
Oh, thank you. I want to start off by first saying that I just am thankful to be a part of this and humbled to be a family in NASCA. Y'all just do an awesome job. It just it's a really great work, and that's part of the reason why I wanted to get involved is because, you know, we need to be able to let people know that they're not alone and there's people before them. And there'll be people that after them, and that's the people after them is the ones that we're doing this for, so that when they do, we want them to become, go from victim to survivor, and I think that's a big thing. And in my story started off, actually before I come out of the wound, my father had shot my mother when she was 4 months pregnant with me. And after I was born, my mother, I guess I reminded her of him, so she took it on her that I was going to pay for his sins. And, you know, she was very violent. I could just, you know, be sitting watching TV, and all of a sudden I'd go flying across the room for no reason, because she just, it felt anger, and I was at the blunt of it. The thing about with physical and sexual abuse is, when it's happening to you as a child, you don't know that it's wrong. You think it's normal because that's your life. And I think for a long time I lived in denial of what was going on, because I didn't see the outside world. Because a lot of times when you are being abused, you're locked away from the world because they don't want other people to know, and they don't want you to be able to get away. And that was a big part of my mother's weapon that she used against me, was that, you know, outsiders weren't allowed in, people didn't come in the house, you didn't go to other people's houses. And like I said, the abuse started early on, the physical abuse. The sexual abuse was later on, ranging probably from around about 5 or 6, really, I guess I believe is when it really began. But the thing about it was is that I become like the adult of the house. I felt like that it was put on me, that it was my job to make everybody happy, to keep everybody quiet. And when you take that on, you lose that child that you're supposed to be. And for a long time, I personally couldn't see the depth of the help that I needed. And it was through, like, going to school and things like that, I was able to see that there was people who acted different. People, they didn't hit you, they didn't touch you inappropriately. And, you know, when they did things for you, it wasn't because they were trying to get something out of you. And that's, really they got me to the point when I did finally eventually get away.
It's quite a bio here. While you were talking, I was reading. Yeah, I host so many shows that sometimes the stories sort of like go into each other, you know what I'm saying? Because I work with so many different people. But then there are those bios that stand out. And you're even a part of human trafficking, okay?
Yes, ma'am.
And all kinds of things. You know, we're going to cover a lot in here. And I know you want to talk about the heroes and the angels you met along the way, and I can identify with that, okay? Because that's another reason why I'm alive today. I want to go to the panel. You told us a little bit here. There's a lot more. And I would like to bring people on and let them ask you a question. Are you okay, honey?
Sure.
Okay. I hear some kind of noise. Okay. We have Bob from Australia, and he's an ambassador of Australia. How you doing there, Bob?
Yeah, my apologies for the background noise, Carol. It's just started to rain, and I just love Queensland rain. It's absolutely awesome. So I can't do anything about the background noise. Not yet, you know, that's in God's hands. I just want to say, g'day, monsieur. Yeah, I call you sister because just from my own journey, you know, and Carol mentioned that, you know, the problem of childhood abuse isn't just in the USA, it's global. And it certainly is, because what I've discovered is that I cannot imagine a child that's grown up in any family in Western society that has never been abused or frightened or terrified, even for a moment. You know, and it doesn't matter whether it's physical, sexual, emotional, spiritual abuse. Abuse is abuse. And it's that moment of terror that, you know, does the damage. So I love the way that NASA is providing a platform for people to share their story and share their truth and share what works for them. And I don't know if Bill's listening, just to say thanks, Bill. I am now the host for the Thursday NASCAR Zoom show, and I'm really excited about doing that because we have a lot of fun down there. So keep
That's
up the good.
Good
work, Melissa. I'll send you a friend request.
Thank you, definitely, yes.
Okay, that's great. Thank you, Bob, for that. Thank you so much. I'm going to put him on hold, and maybe the rain will calm down. I don't know. So let's go to Penelope, and she's an ambassador also. Penelope, maybe you have a question or you'd like to say hello right now because it's early in the game here. Go ahead.
Oh, Mia, I just wanted to say a more formal hello. And, you know, I did read your bio, and, you know, it just really struck me. In the first, you know, the first sentence, you're the author of a, you know, 12-step workbook for survivors of sexual abuse. And then the next, you know, two sentences, you were born, even before you were born, as you just mentioned, in the womb, you know, you were subjected to abuse and, you know, beatings and poisonings and sexual abuse. And I just, to me, to read the first sentence of you've written a 12-step workbook, and then to see, you know, what you were born into and transcended. I think the word we were using on Wednesday was transcended. You transcended that. It's just amazing to me that, and I know we're going to talk about having angels along the way and things like that, but just I think that's amazing. And I know you probably have too. I've read a lot about, you know, and they've done, you know, studies on, you know, children born to survivors of Holocaust and just how in utero, you know, that stress can be transferred to the baby, you know. And, you know, being born into already, I guess, in a deficit, if you will, of just not even knowing, you know, that there's good in the world and things can be calm and peaceful. So I didn't really have a question. Actually, my one question was poisoning. I don't know if you want to talk about that, but that just struck me as well. But I'm already in awe of you is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah,
thank
me
you
too. And you know what? Let me go down the panel, and then we'll get back to that part because that's a biggie too, all right? And I want you to focus on that. I don't know what those background noises are. Okay. Thank you so much for Penelope, and I feel exactly the same way you do. Hold on a second. I'm going to mute everybody's and just call on you, okay? Okay, Pamela, I'm going to go down to you. Okay, from Louisiana, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Carol. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine, too. And she, too, is an ambassador. We have ambassadors tonight. This is good. This makes me very happy. Let me tell you something really quick before you ask her a question or make a comment. I have been reaching out to the ambassadors, and we do ask from NASCA, please, to come on, okay? You know, once a month, pick your day, Monday through Friday, just come on. And this way you get to be known as ambassadors, and then people can contact you as well if they need help or direction. And if you have any questions, the ambassadors, about what your role is, please call me, okay? I'm on the contact list. I've put out a lot of names there. But I am on the contact list. I'm the night owl, all right, Carol Levine, and I'm the night owl. And you can call me anytime you want, okay? And we'll discuss whatever questions you might have. Okay, thank you so much for that. Thank you, Pamela. Go ahead.
Hi, Mia.
Hi.
Is that your name?
It's Melissa, but I go by Mia.
Okay. You sound like you're closer to me, like where you're from. Are you from Florida?
No, I'm actually originally from Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Yeah, you sound like Tennessee around that area.
Yeah.
I just want to welcome you to the show. And I know every time we tell our story, we feel something within our body. So I just want you to relax and just know that we're here for you. We're here supporting you. We want to hear your story because it helps other people. But at the same time, we know how painful it is to go through it again. And I just want to thank you for coming on the show to do this.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. Thank you for that, Pamela. Okay. Okay. Let me go down to Deborah. Glad to see that she is here, and she's from Arizona. Hi, Deborah.
Hello. Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. And let me be a part of this conversation to let me get started with that. I've been in this process before, and I will have to do it again, I guarantee you. One of the things that caught my ears, and I'm pretty sure it caught Carol's too, because we have similar mothers, the brunt of it. I do want to hear more of the brunt of it, because I did get the brunt of it as a child, and I'm still getting the brunt of it as an adult. I would love to hear more of that from you and the process that you went through that. And I'm here to listen, and I'm going to, but thank you so much for being here. I so greatly appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Deborah. Thank you for that. Okay. And all right, let's examine that part, if you don't mind, because she brings up a good point. I had problems with my mother. Deborah had problems with her mother. You had problems. But there's so many people that have a mother issue. All right, so many people have a mother issue. I try to educate the people that are listening, too, out there. Remember, it's not just we on the panel and you on the show. So we try to teach people as we go along by telling our story and also bringing up certain points of the story, which so many of us do deal with. You know, we look to our parents, you know, for nurturing and for direction. And if we don't have that nurturing, if we don't have that direction, many times we have to grow ourselves up, and a lot of times because of the situations in the home, you as a child, and I went through this too, become like the parent. You take over the parent role, like you have to like, oh, let me help mommy out before daddy kills her or something, whatever, you know, which was my case. But then she became not a nice mommy anyway. But the point is we do have mother issues. Now, why don't you speak a little bit more like Deborah had brought up. You did have problems with your mother, and you had to move forward and forgive. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, with my mother, she suffered from schizophrenia as well, so there was times that, you know, she would be afraid of things, and I would be the one that would have to step in and assure her that, you know, this wasn't something you had to be afraid of or no one was after us. And a lot of times that's where the abuse would interact and step in, because she would do things saying that it was because of, you know, this was going on. And in her head, she got it in her head that I was the devil. So, you know, there was times when she would say, well, you know, you're evil, so I have to do this. You make me, you know, you make me act this way. And so I played that part of trying to be the good daughter. To do, you know, try to do everything I could perfectly, to getting up in the morning, and even when I could barely reach the kitchen sink and making coffee, I can remember at one point I probably was around about 5 years old, and I could just barely, you know, get up to the sink, and I had made coffee and I had spilled it in the drainer there, and she took the whole coffee pot and just threw it at me and slung it all over me because of that little spot of coffee that I had spilled. So, you know, it was like that every day. There wasn't a day where there was happy days where she was in a good mood and stuff. There was always something that was going on in her head, or she had some reason that she felt that she should act out, you know, that was okay, which, you know, it's never okay for for an adult to abuse a child, but for her, she thought she was validated for doing those things. And you know, it would range anywhere from, you know, she thought somebody was trying to break in, and I'd wake up with her standing over me with a gun over me saying, I gotta get up because somebody's trying to get in the house, and things of that nature. And so I was always at the brunt of everything. And my stepfather, he was more of the one that was abused. It was the other way around, as far as, instead of, you know, the woman being abused, it was him being abused. A lot of times, you know, she would hit on him. I can remember him getting, when she got in her rages, she become extra strong. And I can remember her picking him up over her head and throwing him off the banisters and him
wow.
having to go to the hospital and things like that. So, yeah, he was actually afraid of her. So he wasn't really very much help when it came to trying to protect me. You know, there was times when he would say, well, she's mad, you better run and go hide under the bed or in the closet. But most of the time he would run and hide himself. So, yeah, and it just it was an everyday event, and I got to the point where, you know, at an early age, I could tell what kind of mood she was in by when she got up, how she walked across the floor. That's how in tune I had got into with her moods, and I knew whether I should, you know, hide immediately or, you know, I could come out for a little while.
Yeah, awful. Mm-hmm. Well, it's very hard when a person is suffering from, you know, being a schizophrenic. I worked in Greystone Psychiatric, so I know all too well what, you know, a person is like when they're schizophrenic. Was your mother on any meds of any kind? Did they get her levels checked? And did, what happened with that?
She wouldn't go to the doctor. She was, you know, never on any kind of medication. Now she's actually in a home, and she's been taken care of, and she has medication and stuff, but all through my childhood, she was never on any kind of medication or anything like that. And the family was actually afraid of her. Their reasoning, they said, for not stepping in was because they didn't know what she was capable of doing to them, because she knew what, you know, was going on in our household. So they were afraid to even step in and do something, because she was dangerous. I mean, she had her moments where, you know, you just, like, you know, grabbing a gun and thinking that you're her enemy and she's gonna, you know, kill you. She would, you know, go into all kind of rages and break everything in the house. It was nothing for her to take and break all the dishes in the house. We had to go and buy dishes all the time because she would just take them and sling them against the fireplace.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's very, very, very frightening, I'm sure, for children to watch that. I saw a lot of abuse and a lot of craziness in my childhood, too, before I was sexually abused. That was a little before the age of 6. But you, with your, what you're talking about here, when a person is schizophrenic, yes, they do have all kinds of things that they're, you know, scared to death of, absolutely. And I'm so sorry you had to go through that. I truly am very, very sorry. You must have been hiding. What did you do when your mother would get like that?
There was times that I would hide in the closet, and there was other times I can remember just, I mean, even being like, you know, 5 or 6 and standing outside in the middle of the night at 3 a.m. in the morning, hiding in the bushes, and you could hear her from the inside of the house just screaming and breaking things. And, you know, I would just try to find a place to hide and be warm until I could come inside, because you didn't dare go inside while she was having that rage, because you would have been the one that would end up being slung up against the wall. And, you know, my stepfather was the same way. He would go and hide because she would go after him. You know, she had stabbed him and stuff like that. And, he stayed with her until he passed away. They were married for 30-something years, that he and she was like that the whole time they were married. He just, I don't know. I was lucky, though. I got away at 12, but I stayed sick a lot as a child. There was times I couldn't go to school and stuff because, you know, I would throw up a lot. And there was the only time that she was nice to me, because I would be on the couch and I couldn't hold my head up because I'd be throwing up or whatever. But later on, she admitted to my brother that she actually was taking and putting cleaner in our food, and that's why I was actually sick. And she was getting attention from my father's family. They would come and visit because I was sick and stuff. So, yeah, she was putting, like, Pine Sol and things like that in my food, and that's what was making me sick.
That's terrible. That's where the poisoning comes in. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. That's just a horrific thing. I can identify with that, but not with me. I saw my uncle, a pedophile, poison a bird, so that bird died. Nice guy. But anyway, you were brainwashed in believing that you were unlovable and God hated you. So your mother would tell you things like that. So even God wouldn't even love you. So you felt like a child. Look at how my mother is. My father's not being supportive in this role as being a father because he's afraid of her. When you did go to school, how many siblings did you say you had?
I have two sisters and a brother, but only two of them were raised in the house. And we have a twin brother and sister that was raised in the house.
Okay. So did your mother go after them also? I mean, she went after everyone, didn't she?
Well, actually, with my twin brother and sister, she never physically laid her hands on them, but she did. You know, she admitted that she had poisoned them, but as far as physical abuse or anything like that, nothing like that had taken place with them.
Now, with you, on the other hand, it always seems like there's always one that they pick out, you know what I'm saying? Isn't that nice? But anyway, the point is this. Did you have bruising on you and so forth? I'm just curious.
I did, but it was mainly, you know, she was pretty smart about what she did. Like, she would hit me on my shoulders or in the head. Here, probably about 15 years ago, I went to the doctor, and they did a scan, and you can see the lesions on my brain because I had been hit in the head so much. You could actually, because that's a lot of times that's where she would get me. She would either punch me in the head, or I don't know if you remember when they had the baby bottles, they were glass, and when my brother and sister were born, she would take those bottles and she would hit me right on my shoulders with them. That was her, or get me on my knee, anywhere she could get me where it wouldn't show.
I am so sorry. So sorry for that. So, okay, then you go into, after leaving home, I said that you were a victim of human trafficking as well, and a broken foster care system. I know about broken foster care systems. All right, tell us a little bit about the, what you're talking about there.
I left home... I left home when I was around about 12, 13 years old, and I lived with family members for a while. And at the age of around about 15, I had a family member that had sold me into trafficking. And that went on for about a year, and, you know, it was horrific, the things that I had to go through and everything. But how the amazing thing about it and the reason why I still have faith is, as far as in God is because I had, my story was, you know, I was out there. There was no escape for me at the time. I didn't know how to get away or how to get out of it. I was just basically told this is what I had to do because, you know, it was making money for the family members. So I was forced into doing that. And I had went into an Eckerd's, and I was dared to take a tuba lipstick. And so I took that lipstick, and I went out the door, and the alarm went off, and I ran up this hill. Well, at the time I was running, the manager was trying to catch up with me. And, I mean, I was, like, way up the head. I was, you know, pretty athletic. So I had jumped over cars and everything else, and something in me said, "Are you not tired of running? Aren't you tired of running, Militia?" And I just stopped in my tracks. And, I mean, that man was, like, he probably was, you know, four or five blocks away from me. I could have easily got away, and I just stopped and stood there and waited for him to catch up with me because I was tired of running. I was tired of having, you know, to go through all those things. And when he caught up with me, that's how I ended up in the foster care system. It actually saved my life in a way, but at the same time, I had to go through things in the foster care system. But I was able to get away from my family because it was at that point when I first admitted that, you know, I was being abused and everything, and they called in what we call in Chattanooga DHS, Department of Human Services. They called them in, and I went into a group home at that time.
Well, group homes can be very good, or they can be very bad. You know, that's just the way it is. So what exactly happened in the group home? I mean,
well, after I was in the group home for a few months, and after that I was moved into a foster home. And the foster home that they had moved me into, the lady, she was an elderly lady, and the place they moved me into, it was run down. They had locks on their freezers and refrigerator and everything, and the woman's son had just got out of prison, and he obviously had been in prison for a while because his dress, clothes and stuff that he still had was like from back in the 70s and stuff. And he ended up, he was messing with the girls that were coming into the foster home there, and I was raped while I was living in that foster home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm, wow. Okay. Well, we have had two more people call in. The show is it's fantastic tonight. We have a lot of people. One person did drop, and I know why. But the other, for goodness sake, we have two more. So I'm going to go through the panel. And I'm going to start from the top. That's what I do. And we'll go to Bob. And I do hope that his rain stopped. Okay. Bob from Australia, you're on.
Yeah, the rain stopped. But you might hear the frogs singing in the background because they hide in all the gutters and downpipes. Because
maybe they'll be a little quieter. I don't know.
I'm not.
Go ahead. Do you have a question? We have such a huge panel tonight. Everybody's here.
Yeah, I'll be quick, Carol. Something you said early on about it's a shame, with COVID hoax that's going on. Kids aren't going to school because school was a safe place. Well, my mum was my abuser. She was a refugee from Germany at the end of World War II, came to England, met my dad, married, and I was the first offspring of that union. So here I am, a little English boy, and mum sent me to school in England, dressed in lederhosen with a crew cut. So I was a kraut in the playground. So I got the shit kicked out at home and at school, and where I can identify with Melissa is the only safe place that I found at home was in the airing cupboard. I'd go and it was in the bathroom upstairs, a great big airing cupboard, and I'd go and hide in there while mum was downstairs beating the shit out of my dad with a vacuum cleaner.
Good God. I have to admit, that's kind of funny, but it's not. All right, go ahead.
I'm glad that I can laugh at it now because, I've been there and I've forgiven them. So, yeah. Melissa, we're all victims of victims. And if you don't hand it back, you pass it on. And we're all in this together, eh? So keep up the
definitely.
Good work, everybody.
Thank you.
That's right. That's right. All right, well, thank you for sharing that. I'm sorry I laughed, but I got this mental picture. I don't know. But anyway, okay, we'll talk to you later.
If you can't laugh at yourself, then what's the point, The day I stop laughing.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yes, laughter is like it heals people. It does. It absolutely.
Yes, it does.
Okay. Yes, it does. I'll get back to you later. Okay. Okay, let me put him on hold and bring on Penelope. My mouse is not working very well tonight.
Oh, Carol,
right,
your mouse is always perfectly. Your mouse works perfectly.
I need to get a new one. Yes, I do. I need to shut my mouth and get a mouse. Yes, I do. Okay, there you do. Go ahead. Ask a question. Go ahead.
Thank you. It's Penelope Mia. I guess, was there ever a time, and before, obviously, you went into the group home into foster care, but I'm thinking about you describing, living with your mom, who was not only abusive, but also schizophrenic, and just that constant state of being in fear as a child, living in an environment like that. I can't even imagine. I mean, I lived in fear, from an explosively abusive, both parents, but I can't imagine adding, schizophrenia on top of that. So my question is, was there ever a time before you went out off to, you went to the group home or into foster care that you ever had, I guess, a sanctuary, a place where you could go and feel safe and just let down for a few minutes, to get out of just that constant state of just being, in terror?
That would have been my father's mother, my grandmother, my Granny Carrie, I would get to visit her sometimes, and she, you know, she was elderly at the time, but she just thought that I hung the moon, and that was one of my angels, because she thought I could do no wrong, and I was the last born of that generation, so I was the baby, and so when I would get to visit her, and she's part of one of the people who taught me what love truly is supposed mm-hmm. to be. But yeah, I would get times where I would get to visit her, and you know, she would take care of me, and she didn't abuse me. And then I was a big music person, so I would get lost in my music. I am working on a book now called The Cowboys Don't Cry. And when I was little, I told everybody I was a cowboy, and I had a little guitar, and I would write music and stuff like that, and that was my thing. And I got lost a lot of times in my music and things, and that was part of what saved my life as well, as I was able to escape into that world, and I didn't have to, you know, kind of look at everything for a moment. I could do that.
I'm glad you had those things. Those, I always call them like an oasis in a desert.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you have. Thank you for answering my question.
Yeah,
oh, you're welcome.
And that was good. That was good, Penelope. You know what? We all have to find something. You know, we just simply do. So, but anyway, let's go down to Pamela. Okay, let me open up her mic. Okay, there we go. Pamela, you're on. Go ahead. You have a question or a comment to make?
Yeah. I was really relating to what you were saying, Mia, about music. You know, I was sexually abused from the age of 4 to 18 by my mother's second husband. She actually picked me out. She was a very uncaring mother who slept all day, and the only time we, you know, had any contact with her was when she was swearing and cussing us out, and while she was getting ready for work, her and my stepdad would fight, and there'd be holes in the walls, and I mean, you know, we're just scared little kids, you know. But when I got a little older and I was in, went to school, I got into the marching band and I played clarinet. And so I would go into the garage outside on the patio, close the door, and hop up on the freezer, and it was just me and my clarinet, and I would just play. And it was like my sanctuary, you know. And it was neat that you had that. My question is, was the law ever called at any point? And, you know, when your mother was throwing things and yelling and screaming, the neighbors didn't hear it and the law wasn't called?
There was a couple of times when, you know, it the arguments between my stepfather and her would escalate and, you know, the police might be called. But very seldom, because I think it was still back in that time when, you know, people didn't get involved. So everybody, you just would kind to, you know, kind of stay away. And my mother at the same time, even though she had an illness, she was also very clever as far as a lot of people still to this day, they think she's just the sweetest woman. Would just, you know, they just would not imagine who she actually was, because she would go to church and she just played that part. So it was, she was good at hiding. And, but yeah, the only time I can remember really maybe a couple of times the police come out because, you know, the one time when she had stabbed my father, they got involved at that time and they had to go to court over that.
Okay. And she never, your daddy never thought about committing her for any length of time, I guess. Like,
you know, I think he had been abused by her for so long. I think he was afraid, or I know there's a name for it when you kind of, you get attached to your abuser. I can't think of it right now. Yeah, he was kind of like that. Yeah. And he just, I mean, he loved her, and, he would try to protect, when she would do things wrong, he would stand up for her, and he would be like, you know, that's my wife. And, you know, so he really, he backed her up, and she, yeah, it was a really bad situation.
Oh, man. What about your other siblings? When they witnessed this happening to you, what did they do to help you, or what did they do?
Well, with my twin brother and sister that were in the household, there's a 7 years difference in us. I was 7 years old when they were born. So by the time, you know, that they were old enough to really see what was going on, I had already left home, because I left home about 12 or 13. So, but with them, yeah, with them, they were my father, my stepfather's children, so they were more protected and everything, and they didn't really, they don't have a lot of memories of her acting like that. They didn't see all that.
Oh, so you, when did your first dad, when did your biological dad leave?
Well, he had shot my mother, you know, when before I was born, so he was never was in the household. He passed away in prison when I was a few months old after I was born.
Oh, okay. All right. I didn't understand him. Okay. Thank you for your story. You're doing very
thank
well.
You, Boo.
Oh, she's doing a fine job. Thank you for that, Pamela. Okay. Now let me move on down here. We have... we have William from Louisiana. I've got a lot of ones here, and I'm sure that's William. Yes, it is. Hold on a second. Come on. Okay, there we go. William, hi, how you doing? William?
All right. I'm from Alabama.
Yeah, it says L.A. here, so I know. That's all right. That's right. Well, I only read what's in front of me is what I read. Go ahead. You have a question or a comment you'd like to make?
Well, she's telling her story, and I'm really proud of her for telling her story, because that's a rough one when it's family and human trafficking and a lot of things like that that's involved and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really proud of her telling her story.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, we're all proud of you, okay, because you have quite a story here. And look where you are today. See, that's what's so important. There is life after abuse. There just simply is. And that's something that, you know, we try to stress. You know, yes, you're always going to have problems. We all have our problems. But there is life after abuse. Okay, thank you for that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I thought there was one more down here, but I can't get it. All right. I think Darlene's on. Can you open up her mic for me? Because truly, I am having trouble with my mouse. I did drop it. I think I broke it. I got it. It worked. Okay. That's just William's back on. No, it's not working. Pamela.
Yeah, no, we
or Penelope.
Lost, we lost.
Penelope,
yeah,
you know, if you can scroll down. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just want to let you know, we just lost Darlene. Sometimes she drops off and then calls back in.
Oh, did she? Okay, all right. Yeah, I dropped that. I have a confession. I dropped my mouse yesterday, and I do think I broke it. I didn't know that until now. Sorry about that. Okay, we still have a nice, healthy panel here. So, okay, let's get back to the story here. And, boy. Okay, you have here, with the holidays here and pandemic at hand, we need those heroes more than ever. And that is so, so, so true. Tell us what you're talking about with that.
Well, I just know that, you know, from my experience and everything, it was those people who, it's what helped me get to the point where I'm at. You know, it was experiencing, you know, the love that my grandmother showed, or the school teacher that lived down the road. We had a school teacher that lived about four doors down, and I would go and I would visit her, and I would water her plants. She was an elderly lady. She was probably in her 80s, and she would have me water her plants, and she would make me cookies for watering her plants. And my mother would allow me to do that because, it looked good on us. And during the times, I would get to sit out on her patio, and she would talk to me. And, it was her kindness, and then, you know, the kindness of, I had a fifth grade teacher that took interest in me, and he taught me things, and that experience that I had with people along the way who helped me. And then later on, when I come to the realization that I had to deal with my childhood and what had happened, I was in my 30s, and there was an advocate that I had come in contact with actually on Facebook. She had wrote that series, Can You Hear Me Now, to Annie Sullivan. And we started talking, and I packed my bags, and I traveled North America for a year when I started going through everything. Really just it hit me. And every day during that time, she stayed in touch with me, and she would check on me, and we would talk and everything. And, you know, it saved my life, because when, you know, there's the experience you have, and then there's the time that you come to when you have to deal with everything. And I think when you come to that point when you have to deal with everything, you think you're losing your mind, because you just, it all hits you at once. And it's in those moments, those heroes that step in, and they're like, you know, they don't judge you, and they don't, they're just there to help you. They don't want nothing from you. And that's when you learn what, you know, really how, you know, people are supposed to be, what unconditional love is and everything, because most of us abused as a children, we don't have a clue what really unconditional love is. We don't know that it just is. It's just love. Nobody wants something from you. They just, you know, they just want to good for you, and they want to do good for you. And it was during those times that I learned that. And that's, I think it's really, for me, that's why I am who I am today, because, you know, I didn't, you know, I chose not to be a violent person. I chose not to abuse, you know, anybody physically or sexually, because, you know, it was because I had those experiences where I knew there was a different way to live, and I wanted to choose that good side. And, you know, it went back to the fact that with my mother had always told me I was bad and everything. So for me, it was almost like I was going to prove her wrong. I was going to be the good. I was going to be the good one. I was going to try really hard not to be what she had labeled me to be.
That's right. Well, you know, with the statistics, 70%, okay, of us do not abuse our children, 70%, and 30% do. Now, if there's been any change in those stats, I'm not aware of it. No one else is either on this show. But so most of us, you know, even though we go through horrific, horrific, horrific times in our lives, we don't want that for our own children if we have children, okay?
Right.
We want them to have, you know, if we get our heads together, we want them to have a better life than what we went through. And we are able to do that if we get help. Now, did you ever get any professional help of any kind, like a therapist or counselors or anything like that?
I did. I probably have altogether now. See, I'm 45 now, and I've probably had altogether about 10 years of therapy. And, you know, one of the things that that really were defining moments with my therapy was that I can remember I had this one therapist. He was this big old tall 6-foot-something guy, and he just had tears just rolling down his eyes. And he said, "Melissa, I'll cry for you until you can cry for yourself," because I didn't feel, and that's part of, you know, I talked about what I'm, with the book I'm working on now is Cowboys Don't Cry, because I didn't feel like it. I wasn't, I didn't feel it was safe enough for me to have emotions during the time to survive what I had to survive. I couldn't have feelings. I couldn't have emotions, or I wouldn't have survived it. So I had to learn to cry. I had to learn to mourn that loss of that little girl's childhood and everything. And it was, you know, during those times that, you know, in therapy and things like that, that they let me know, hey, it's okay to have those feelings. It's okay to be sad about that, because I didn't have those buttons that, you know, most people do. Like if you come up and punch them or something, they're like, oh, that hurts, or I'm in danger. I didn't have those buttons. I had to train myself to have those buttons.
Yep. I can identify with that completely. When I was a kid, I wasn't allowed to cry, you know. If I cried, they threw me outside, or they'd say, I'm going to give you something really to cry about now, you know. So
yeah.
So many of us do that, though, is my point for bringing it up, is that we suppress, we don't let those tears out. I can't cry right today even. I mean, it'll get like up to, you know, the lump in the throat, like they say, and then it'll go away. So I'm not able to, like, release the grief of whatever the moment is, whatever it is. I can't get it out. And I don't know. I don't know if I ever will. So if you want to say that I'm left with that, you know, from from childhood. Yes, I'm left with that. Other people, the things that happen and that I've seen, other people be bawling all over the place, and I'm just standing there. You know what I'm saying? And I think you do know what I'm saying from what you're saying.
Yeah.
So we go through so many things in our lives when we're abused as children that we find it very hard to do the normal things that people normally do that just, you know, just normally happen, all right? Some of us, we're still grieving for the child within, as we call it, you know, and there's been books written on that. Because we aren't able to be children. We don't have childhoods. Our childhoods are taken away from us. And it's all about survival, okay? Like you just mentioned a minute ago, that, you know, with the crying and all that stuff, and the survival mode. We go into a survival mode. It's either that or we don't make it.
Right.
I tried to commit suicide when I was 17. Many people have done that. You know, many survivors, you'll hear them come on and they'll say that I got into alcohol and drugs. I certainly did. I didn't do heroin, but I was popping pills and drinking. And I was popping Quaaludes. So, you know, it's amazing that with all the things that are going on, because we're trying to push that grief away. We're trying to push it away and we don't want to feel anymore. And maybe that's another reason, too, why we can't cry, because we don't want to feel anymore. It takes a lot of emotion to cry. There's emotion behind that. I can laugh my ass off in plain English, okay? But when it comes to sad situations, I can't cry. And I really wish I could. It might make me feel better. I don't know. Whatever. So we go through these things, you know, when we're children of abuse. And the very fact that so many of us do make it, I mean, there's a lot of kids that do commit suicide, let's face it, they don't make it. Or they put themselves in risky behaviors where they just simply get killed or something. And a lot of times we have all kinds of, you know, disorders like eating disorders, or very big time with bulimia and anorexia, you know, things like that. Or, again, risky behavior. There's so many things. There were cutters and those of us who try to commit suicide and the alcohol, the drug abuse. It just goes on and on and on and on. I have a list, but I'm not going to go over it. But so we, the survivors today, who have been through so much, and we don't take a yardstick to anyone's story, you know, like, whoa, this person went through so much more than that person. We don't do that because trauma is trauma, okay? That's what it is. It's trauma. And it affects us all, you know, differently. Some people turn out and end up getting their PhDs, or they made it, okay, if you want to call that being made, I don't know. But I'm just saying, you know, they end up with their PhDs. Others write books. Others write music. I was an athlete. I wouldn't run very far today, I don't think. Well, maybe somebody was chasing me, I don't know. But I was an athlete, and I turned to music also. I used to sing in New York City. I feel, wow, that's cool. I wasn't alone. We had a band and things like that. So, you see, but it was like a cover-up. It was, but we need that. We need a place to escape, too, okay? We need that as a place to escape. And so with me, it was running. I would go out and run like a maniac until I would drop, okay? And I'd feel better afterwards. But like you said earlier on, and I'm going to bring that out, we have to face, you might as well say, face our demons, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if we face the things that are bothering us, all these things, and I had feelings of hatred, I wanted to, you know, shoot one person, twist somebody's neck around, another one. All these many people that had abused me physically, sexually, emotionally, all this other stuff, I wanted to annihilate them because they had hurt me so. But we can't do that, okay? And, I mean, you can, but you're going to go to jail if you get caught, right? So it's better to deal with the emotions that we are lacking or that we do have. And to get help, you know, to get help. And that can come in many forms. Some people get help from AA. Some people get help, you know, going to a therapist. But I say to people out there who need a therapist, first of all, the shame is not yours. You're not to blame, okay? Put the blame where it belongs. You are a child and you are a victim. And you have nothing to be ashamed of, okay? That's number one. And number two, if you do find a counselor or a therapist or a psychiatrist, whatever the case might be, always make sure that they understand enough about child abuse. Because if you don't walk in our shoes, I don't like saying this, we can have some good therapists and so forth who've never been abused. They have to have a real understanding of it, though, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And remember, they work for us. Okay? They work for us. And so just, you know, there's nothing wrong. You've heard the term doctor shopping, but that's a bad thing, okay? Usually it has to do with drugs. But you can therapist shop. You can do that because that person is going to be the one that you're going to sit and you're going to spill your guts out to. And if you do this, if you spill your guts out to this individual and they're a good therapist, then you can get a lot of good help. And that's when your healing starts to begin, when you tell your story and you get help and know that the blame is not on you at any given time, at any time, no matter what the situation is. Okay, so let's get back to you. Mia, I think maybe I should go through the panel one more time. And then I want to get about talk about your books that you're coming out. You have already had the workbook. And I really like those. And then also, too, you're right in the middle of writing another book, and we'll talk about that. So let me go to, I always start at the top of the list, so let me go to Bob. Okay, there we go, from Australia. Hey, are you still there?
Yeah, yeah. What a beautiful conversation today. Just what springs to my heart. Because I don't live in my mind, I live in my heart. But what springs to my heart is that feelings are healings. And I've come to realize that can I borrow your teeth? If you continually swallow your feelings, one day they will drown you. So for me, it's all about, you know, I healed myself by turning my mind off and just honoring my feelings. And, it's that, you know, we're all victims of victims. We have been subjected to multi-generational cycles of abuse through this society that we do support. But for me, this society doesn't feel right. We're not here to live in competition. I'm not here to climb over you to get to the top, you know. And greed. My life is abundant. I got $50 in the bank, but I'm the richest bloke I know because I'm content with me in my life.
That's right.
So for me, it's time to break the multi-generational cycle of abuse, go back. Well, this is just a suggestion because I do not give advice because we're all equal, unique, and sovereign. Sovereign, unique, and equal, Sue. But healing the wounds of my childhood was the most powerful work I've ever done. And that's my mantra, that's my mission. And there's nothing wrong with each and every one of us because we are all products of creation. We are all products of God. And it's only the mind that complicates everything. So love you all. And yeah. I'm just so grateful to be alive at this time in the evolution of humanity, because we are ascending. Integrity is overcoming power. And if you You know, if you don't know what integrity, if you, integrity is like virginity, isn't it? You know, you are, you've either got it, or if you screw with it, it's gone. Okay, that's pretty deep, and I'll get back to being jovial. Thanks so much for sharing,
okay,
everybody. Great to be part of the family.
Well, we're glad to have you too, Bob. Thank you for that. And I agree with a lot of what you just said. Okay. Let me get your off, and here we go. Let's go down to Penelope. There we go. Okay. Penelope, what do you have to say?
Well, you know, you and Mia was, you know, talking about, you know, in terms of her 15 years of therapy that she's, I believe you said you started when you were around 30 years old and you had this one therapist, but 6 foot, you know, over 6 foot tall gentleman that was just crying, right, as you were telling some truths about what had happened to you, and that you, you know, he was crying the tears that you weren't able to cry yet. And you said, you know, you said you had to teach yourself, right, how to feel those
mm-hmm.
feelings. And I haven't read your workbook, so maybe those steps are in there. But that struck me because we've all talked a lot in the show about dissociation, right, about you do go numb when you're a child. That's how you survive. And I know we learn to go numb with our emotions. And when you're an adult, right, having to learn how to feel those feelings, that's like learning a foreign language and having to teach yourself the language that you're trying to learn, as far as I'm concerned. So how did you learn to feel those feelings? That was the question I had when you were saying that. You had to teach yourself to feel those feelings. How did you do that?
By being around healthy people. I had to, you know, experience healthiness in order to see what it was like, in order to, you know, to see how they interacted, and that, you know, it was safe and it was okay to do this or to do that. And it really was when I got older as an adult, creating a healthy environment, because I didn't know what was healthy. And just like with the therapist who was crying for me, I was sad for him. I wanted to, you know, protect him, and you know, so it was my nature to, I kind of had that protective nature with people. So I felt sorry for him because he was crying for me, and it was, you know, different experiences like that, and seeing that, you know, it's healthy and it's okay to have feelings, because I wasn't allowed at all to have, you know, feelings, because, you know, if I cried, it made it worse. And so it just really was getting into a space in life and knowing that that I was no longer in danger, and that I was okay just to let it go. And when I finally got to that point, you know, it was almost like it just, I was so tired, just hit the floor, and it just all, you know, come out, tears and all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That was very good.
Yeah.
Okay, now we're going down to Pamela. Let me get her mic open. Oh, there we go. Good. Pamela, go ahead. Do you have a question or a comment to make?
Yes. We were just talking about the feelings and everything. It is like somebody told me one time, it's like the emotions that we have and the feelings that when you open up a golf ball, I don't know if anybody's ever done that, and seen all the different rubber bands and colors going out all in through there, and it's just a mess. And for us to be able to go through that only from the strength of the Lord could we ever unravel that mess, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And my question to you was, when you heard that voice that said, stop running, who was that? Who was that talking?
Those are my moments I call my God smiles. That is, I believe, is my higher power. I call it those moments where it's my awe moments. I call it God smiles because, you know, throughout life I've had those moments. And for me, that was God telling me, you know, it was my time to begin to try to heal. And even though I had to go through some more things, like with going into
that foster home, it was a door that opened up to where I was able to get away from the ultimate abuse and everything. And after I got out of the foster home and everything, you know, I'd struggled with drugs and stuff like that too. And I got cleaned up. I went on, I got my GED, and, you know, I went to college. And so it was that door. It was my doorway. And I think it was God speaking to me saying, okay, you know, I think we have doorways in certain parts of our life that we have a voice that says, okay, this is that time. And if we don't, you know, take those doorways, you know, it can be detrimental to us. And I was lucky that I took that doorway.
Amen. Was your grandma spiritual at all? Did she read the Bible? What made her happy, you know?
She was a very religious woman. She never cut her hair, never wore pants or anything like that. So, yeah, she was a very spiritual lady. I'm sure she prayed a lot of prayers for me.
That's what I would get to. I definitely believe that's true. Yeah, she probably kept you from a lot. She probably kept you from death, actually, you know, physical death. Until you could learn to trust and get healed, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. One other question was the sexual trafficking thing. Was it just like prostitution on the streets, or what? How did that work?
No, it was through an escort service.
Oh.
Yeah, it was.
Wow.
That's
weird. Was it like?
It was judges, lawyers, doctors, those people that are supposed to protect us. It was,
Oh, wow. And how'd you get out of that?
When I got in trouble for taking the lipstick, that was when I told that I was being abused and everything, and so they pulled me out of the family situation, and I was able to get help.
So they did. The other people didn't come after you. I mean, you didn't turn them in or anything.
No, I would.
That could have been a very precarious situation.
Yeah, it probably would have put me in too much of a danger if I had, you know, had done that at the time. I don't know that I would still be alive today.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for your information. Mm-hmm. Just think it helps other people to know that they're not alone when it comes to this stuff.
Yes, ma'am.
That's right. Thank you for that, Pamela.
I'm so happy.
Oops. I thought she was done. I'll go back. Did you want to finish a sentence there?
I wanted to say I'm so happy and thankful that you're in the place you are now.
Thank you. Me too, definitely. I feel blessed.
Okay. Amen for that, too. Okay. Now let me get down to William. William's here. Let me get his mic open. Okay, there we go.
It's very interesting that she accidentally got out of that, because that could be a very dangerous situation. Because that's a lot of times run by organized crime and stuff like that. So I'm glad she got out of it.
Yeah,
yeah,
me
definitely.
Too. Yeah. Well, was there anything else you wanted to say or ask a question about?
No, she's telling her story pretty good. I understand a lot of her story, and I don't know where she's headed at right now or what she's got planned in the future yet, but I'm sure she's going to get there.
We're
going to
get there. Yes,
yeah.
We are, honey. Okay. Well, she had quite a story. Thank you for that, Wayne. She has quite a story to tell. So I'd like to, when someone comes on and they've gone through so much and you were together, I could tell tell your story, and you've been on before. So, but I just want to show people out there, you know, that you can go through an awful, awful lot of things and, you know, and still make it. The very fact that some of us are breathing yet today, that we haven't been killed, we haven't been shot, and all this other stuff, is a miracle in itself. And I know with you, you brought yourself up. I don't know if you're, do you have a family now? Are you married or not? What's going on in your life?
Yeah, I'm married and I had one child. He's 23 now, and he's part of what changed my life too. I think that having him, I can remember when I first picked it, when he was born and I put him on my chest, I just fell in love, and I couldn't imagine how anybody could hurt a child. And I think at the same time, it made me really realize the injustice that had been done to me. It opened my eyes to, you know. So yeah, it's I live a pretty normal life. Work Monday through Friday, and you know, I'm blessed. I think for me, just to be able to have a normal life, the average everyday life, you know, is perfect for me, because I think that the odds were against me, and you know, I beat those odds.
You've done a wonderful job with yourself. You absolutely have, okay? You know, I talk to an awful lot of people, and I get telephone numbers all mixed up and all this other stuff because there's just too many people I talk to. They give me calls and stuff. But the point is this. One thing that a lot, that I hear coming through so often, and it could be part of hypervigilance, but not only just hypervigilance. It's also memory and memory control and racing of the mind and all this other stuff. A lot of times people, they look back at their past too much, you know, and it really brings them down. And those mm-hmm. type of people that are still in that, you know, I'm not going to say they're stuck. They can be, you know, very active, out working and being a good mommy, daddy, whatever. I don't care what they're doing. But if they continue to look backwards, okay, and look backwards and then feel that pain, if they, you know, feel pain. Me, I feel anger. I'm different, but they might feel pain, you know, and all the things that could bring them down, then it's not easy for them to grow. So you found a way. You found a way. Then we're going to talk about your books really quick. You found a way to either forgive people or look at it in a perspective. Like when I look backwards, it's almost like a movie. It's like I see myself in different situations, and they're bad. They're real bad. And, you know, and still I don't let it stop me from moving forward. I'm that far on my healing journey, and so are you, okay? So when you do look backwards, okay, when you look backwards, you don't look there long, do you? You've forgiven these people? What have you done with them in your mind and in your heart?
No, I've worked, you know, there's times, you know, of course, you still, it's a constant healing. It's a life journey. So there's times that I still have triggers, you know. There might be a smell or a noise or something that might bring me back to an event that happened. But, you know, I've learned tools and stuff to cope with that and to realize that, you know, I'm an adult now and I'm safe. But it was really forgiveness for me that helped me move on. And the mm-hmm. thing about forgiveness is a lot of people get trapped in thinking that they're forgiving that person for what they did. And it's not really about that person. It's about you and letting go of the anger. Because, you know, you're not giving them permission or saying it's okay for what they did, but you're letting go of that anger, because the thing with anger, it will eat you alive, and, you know, it causes all kind of, you know, problems with your health and, you know, anxiety, depression, and it just, you know, the list goes on. And I was an angry adult for a long time, and I had to work through that, because I was angry at God for a while, because I thought, you know, how could a God let, you know, things like that happen to a child? And I had to realize what free will was, and we all have free will, and those people chose to do bad, and that's the thing about the joy of free will, is we get to choose to be good too. We don't live in a dictatorship. We, you know, we're able to make those choices, and that was a part that helped me forgive, because I could forgive the nature of what happened, because I seen that it was on them. It wasn't nothing on me. It wasn't nothing on God. It was on them. And I wasn't going to allow them to control my life. I wasn't going to let them take my adulthood. They took my childhood, but, it, you know, excuse my friend, but I wouldn't allow them to take, the, you know, the rest of my damn life. It was mine, and I was going to live it, and that was how I began to look at things.
Well, that's healthy. That's called healthy. Okay. That shows that you've healed all this way so that you can look at it in what you just said, because that's very healthy. And that's the place where, you know, when a person first starts their healing journey, they have to find a way to get to the place where we're at today, those of us who have been on the healing journey for years, because I certainly have been. And we're always going to have, like I used to suffer horribly from nightmares, terribly from nightmares. And now if I have a nightmare, I just get really, really angry. I have an anger issue, okay? And I'll sit up and I'll say, and I won't say what I just said. And it goes away because I lay right back down, honey, and I go right back to sleep. So, you know, we have to find our own ways of, I think with me becoming tough, becoming a rough kid on the street and all this other stuff, it helped me, that helped me stay strong. And then a church group got a hold of me. They straightened my head out. They had counselors there, over 200 people in that prayer group. So they come from all walks of life. And they got a hold of me, and I had to work, believe me, to, you know, you work with your therapist, you work with your counselors, you work with this, with the psychiatrist if you have to go to them, whatever it is, because it is for the good of yourself. And again, I found good ones, okay? And it was from a church, okay? It was from a church, yes it was, a Catholic church, because I'm Catholic. So anyway, the point is, wherever we get our help from, it's important. And we can continue to grow. And as just as you're showing right here, there is life after abuse. No, we're not always going to be 100%. Like I said last week, I don't know of any normies that are 100% either, okay? So, you know, if I'm comfortable where I'm at, okay? I'm comfortable. And I can laugh at myself. And if people are mean to me, I thumb my nose at them. They don't know it, but I do it. And whatever, you know, whatever it takes, because I'm not going to allow for myself to fall backwards, I won't do it. I work too hard to get to where I am today, and that's what you've done. And that's what all of we survivors are able to achieve if we keep working at it. So there is, as I say, there is life after abuse. Now,
definitely.
Getting back to you, yes. And I'm so proud of you. I just want to tell you that. We all are. Tell us a little bit about your workbook and then also, too, about the other book you're speaking about.
With the workbook, that was my first try at, you know, putting out kind of some of the tools that I use to begin to heal. And, you know, it just there's stages that we go through in life, and it's almost like, you know, if somebody passes away and you have to grieve, and I think healing over our childhood is like that. We have to grieve for that lost child, and the book that I'm working on now, it's my life work. It's a lot is coming out in it as far as, you know, talking about, you know, we have stages of grief and about forgiveness and how we just we have to walk through the pain. And one of the quotes that I wrote that I say, you know, we have three things in common. We all have pain. We need that pain validated, and only unconditional love. We need unconditional love, and those are the three things that we all have in common, no matter who we are. And that's kind of how I base my life on, is how I deal with people. I had to learn to be okay with being angry. I had a problem with being angry, but I had a problem that I was angry because I was so fixated on having to be good that I thought if I was angry, then that was wrong too. And so that's one of the things, too, I talk about is, you know, it's okay to be angry. It's, you know, what happened to us was not okay. And you can be angry and be angry in a healthy way. When
right.
It becomes unhealthy is when you react on it and it causes you or somebody else harm. And so I talk about things like that. And just and a big part of who I was as a child as far as, you know, I talked about with the cowboys, you know, as cowboys don't cry because – you know, I was this singing cowboy, and I watched those Westerns with my stepfather, and in those movies, those cowboys, they were tough. They didn't cry. They didn't take nothing from nobody. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, how I had to be as a child. And so it's kind of going from that child into adulthood and learning to let that little cowboy cry. So, yeah, it's my journey, you know, my healing journey. So.
Well, that's wonderful. I mean, you've done it. You've made it, okay? And, you know, there's so many of us out there that, you know, that are still struggling. But when we have, you know, really good guests come on, people have been through so much. And, again, we don't take a yardstick. We don't do that. But because trauma, again, is trauma. But when they see that there's a light at the end of the tunnel, okay, there's a light at the end of the tunnel, that you can go through so much, or maybe not quite so much, but how it affects you, okay, how it affects you, your everyday thoughts, your everyday living, how you feel about yourself. You had mentioned, too, or maybe it was Bob had mentioned, I don't know, if it was somebody there had mentioned, that how you feel about yourself is what's really important, and that's the truth,
mm-hmm.
okay? For years, I went, and we're all many of us. I use the word sensitive. Bill uses something else. But many times we who have been abused are so sensitive, you know, to the reactions of people or whatever, where we shouldn't be quite so sensitive. And we have problems. We have problems with relationships. We have problems, you know, with many things. And that we can even be a little too sensitive, you know, like someone's trying to be friendly and you back away. Whoa, go away from me because you might do something. Because we've been through so much. Okay, mm-hmm. We've been through so much. And so a part of healing is learning how to cope with people. And, you know, a lot of us have problems coping with people. And but on the other hand, you have to realize they are just people. And something that you just said, which is so, so, so true. Many people are mad at God, okay? And I'm not even talking about just survivors. A lot of people, things go wrong. They see kids starving here in another country, whatever the case might be. Well, why would God do this, okay? Well, if there is a God, why does this happen? Why do children get abused? Why do children get murdered? How many kids get murdered a year? I mean, it's awful, you know, because of child abuse. How many of them actually die, you know, and it is awful. But like every 40 seconds, now you're in this category here, every 40 seconds a child gets abducted. They can get abducted. Well, you weren't abducted. You ended out on the streets, and I know many people. I was out on the streets, but you got involved with the service. And then up to 60 Johns a day, all right? They can have up to 60 Johns a day. And those kids are up and down the street. They get beaten into submission. What kind of a world is this that we're living in? Think about the kids, for God's sake, okay? And the situations that brought us out to the streets, all right? The only thing I can say is it's not God's fault, because one thing that Bob did say, which is true, we're born perfect, okay? We're born perfect. And it's what we do with our lives, certainly not in childhood, because we can't help what happened to us, but how what we turn into in our lives, the choices that we make. We realize the mistakes that we make if we learn from them, and then you try to better yourself and become what the best that you can be. And to get help is a wonderful idea, because we need that help. There's nothing wrong with that. And we can become total functioning, yes, total functioning human beings. And we've come a long way. We've come a long way, okay? Because today there is that help. Okay, I just got the cue in my ear that we have 90 seconds, which means we have to wrap up this show. But I want to tell you something. You were a wonderful guest, and I certainly want you to come back again. I don't care if you come back on 50 times, okay, because your story is very compelling, right? And when people make it, they make it, and that's just wonderful. So God bless you, okay? Everybody stay safe, and if the holidays are coming, social distance, sorry. I might even stay home. I might really social distance. I'm not sure yet. I haven't decided. But, you know, we have to take care of ourselves, too. And by doing so, then we are taking care of others, because we're being smart. We're making the right choice. So I just say I hope that this, too, shall pass, okay, with the COVID. And with child abuse, we're survivors, we're warriors, and we keep marching on. So take care, God bless, and good night. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you, honey.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was gone. You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Blog Talk Radio.